Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. This is episode 168. So in the news this week, I just want to give a huge thanks and shout out to everybody who helped out with the Scottish Rite Dyslexia Center's charity event for the Metropolitan Chicago Dyslexia Center. We had the event at the Cigar Lounge. It was a very successful event. We raised some good money for the center. We had a great time. I didn't get to stay long. We had kind of a family emergency I had to attend to, but I did receive the report for the chairman, and it was a success. So thank you to everybody who came out. Brother Kirk Preston ended up getting my cigars, which was awesome. And I also have to congratulate my friend, brother, companion, Brother Brian Shimian of the Midnight Freemasons. I was lucky enough to be involved in his 8th degree in the Cryptic Council of the York Rite. And we had a great night. He received his 8th degree, which is the Royal Master, and it was very fun. I just want to say congratulations to Companion Shimian and to everybody else out there over this last week who received a degree in Masonry between this week and the last. So I know there's a lot of people who were saying they were about to get degrees, they were getting voted on. Congratulations, guys. So the first thing I wanted to cover this week is actually something I have mentioned before. This time, it actually made the Masonic Information Center's focus handout. So if you guys get the Communication of the Masonic Services Association of North America, it's in volume 21, it's issue number 3, and it's from September of 2014. So it's for just this last September. On the back, attention Freemasonry gets, and with that, the Social Media Code of Conduct for Freemasons. So the first thing I'd like to do for you this evening is to read this piece for you, which also includes the guidelines. From the Masonic Information Center, Masonic Services Association of North America, social media draws attention from Freemasonry. Across the continent, Freemasons have been increasing substantially their use of social media, which has become a prime topic for conversation and discussion at Masonic conferences and symposiums. What guidelines should be utilized by Masonic groups? When should Grand Lodges get involved in such practices by local lodges and Masonic members? Should a Mason's use of social media be different from that of an individual citizen? Last year, at the Rocky Mountain Masonic Conference, a social media code of conduct for Freemasons was approved, and since then, several individual Grand Lodges have voted to endorse such a code in their jurisdictions. The conference includes the Grand Lodge of Colorado, Montana, Utah, Wyoming, Idaho, Nevada, and New Mexico. Here is the quote-unquote code approved by the Rocky Mountain Conference. Social Media Code of Conduct. Freemasons should conduct social media activities in a way that reflects membership in the craft, acting in a way that presents positive image of the fraternity, avoiding private piques and quarrels, being cautious in behavior, courteous to our brethren, and to promote the general good and to preserve the reputation of the fraternity. Posting should not bring discredit to Freemasonry, nor should they fit within the definition of un-Masonic conduct as defined by the member jurisdiction. Conduct contrary to the accepted and customary rule of right and duly between Freemasons or to society in general is improper. Freemasons need to be aware that postings are permanent record, and therefore an individual's conduct may influence the world with a positive or negative image about the individual and also about Freemasonry. Postings and actions on various social media outlets should reflect the highest standards of morality and integrity that Freemasons practice within the lodge. Lodge notices and information contained within lodge notices beyond the time and place of the meetings should not be discussed. There should never be discussion related to petitions, applications, background checks, or investigations of an applicant. There should never be a discussion regarding balloting on an applicant. It is improper to identify any Freemason as a member of the craft unless he has provided his consent or has already identified himself as such. It is improper to post images, video recordings, etc. of other Masons without their consent. Posts must comply with the Grand Lodge Constitution, rules, regulations, and edicts of the jurisdiction. Postings that are anonymous or posted by fictitious names should be avoided rather than encouraged. Participation in discussions with those who most often are looking for discussions outside of what is Masonically acceptable should be avoided. To ensure our fraternity represents itself to the highest standards we believe in, we must regulate our actions by the individual restraint and through brother-to-brother intervention. As a Freemason, advise a brother if what he has posted is improper within the framework of our grand constitutions, laws, rules, regulations, edicts, and the general regulations of Freemasonry. Contact and communication with other Grand Lodges or their subordinate or Concordant Lodge must be conducted through the office of the Grand Secretary. Freemasonry in North America is governed by an independent legislative body known as the Grand Lodge, who exercise absolute Masonic authority within a state or province. Only Grand Lodges can make authoritative statements, and these apply only to their members. So there are a few interesting things on there. Number one, the contact and communication with other Grand Lodges is not to be done except through the Grand Secretary. This is broken quite often and all the time. I'm sure it is a means of proper communication, going up the ladder in the proper order type of issue. However, I think that that regulation is kind of silly, in my own opinion. However, it is what it is. I also think that if you're a Freemason and you're on social medias, like many of us are, we tend to act appropriately anyway. It kind of concerns me that we needed to come out with a code of conduct at all. Feel free to drop me a line on Facebook or on Twitter or on the blog page if you are so inclined, and we can discuss it further. I'd love to hear what you guys think about the social media code of conduct. I mean, I think it's a great idea. I just don't know that it was something that was necessary. But as with any rules that are created, they're usually created because somebody broke them. So with that, we'll move on to the next topic. All right, the next thing we have for you is another Short Talk Bulletin, Volume 10, November 1932, Number 11, again, by Unknown. So this one is quite interesting. I think a lot of the people who are interested, the brothers, the ladies, anybody who's listening, who looks for the symbolism, who goes beyond just Masonry 1717, talking about going way back. So this is kind of an interesting one. And again, this is published online, and anybody can grab a hold of it. There's nothing here that I can't read. So here it is. It's called The Acacia. Any discussion of the acacia, important to Freemasonry as one of its fundamental and most beautiful symbols, should begin with the clearing away of a little of the rubbish of the temple, which results from the careless writing of unlearned men. So much has been published about the acacia, which simply is not so, that it is no wonder that Freemasons are frequently confused as to what the plant really is, how it came to be a symbol of immortality, and what its true place in religious history may be. We cannot accurately denote a particular plant or tree as the quote-unquote acacia plant, or the quote-unquote the acacia tree, for the same reason that we cannot accurately specify the quote-unquote rosebush or the pine tree. There are too many varieties of roses, too many kinds of pine trees to distinguish one from the other merely by the definite article. As botanists know, more than 450 varieties of acacia. The acacia can be only the most general of terms, meaning them all. So perhaps it is not to be wondered that we find one Masonic writer speaking of the spreading leaves of the acacia tree and another talking of the quote-unquote low thorny shrub, which is the acacia. We have no certainty that the trees and shrubs now growing in Palestine are the same as those which flourished in Solomon's era, so that it is not impossible that the Acacia totalis in Arabic, Asant, and Acacia sayal in Arabic, sayal, grew to greater size 3,000 years ago than they do now. But authorities doubt that the acacia, which grows low as a bush, and which in all probability must have been the plant which one of the three plucked from the ground as a sprig of acacia, ever grew large enough to supply boards of 3 feet wide. Wynne Westcott says, quote, "The acacia is the only tree of any size which grows in the deserts of Palestine, but it has been doubted that it ever grew large enough to provide planks 1.5 cubits in width." Scholars are united in saying that the Shatah tree, or the Old Testament, is the acacia, and that Shatim, the plural, refers to the acacia. In Joel 3:18, one of the poetic and beautiful prophecies of the Old Testament, we read, quote, "And it shall come to pass in that day that the mountains shall drop down new wine, and the hills shall flow with milk, and all of the rivers of Judah shall flow with waters. A fountain shall come forth of the house of the Lord, and shall water the valley of Shittim," end quote. Commentators place the quote-unquote valley of Shittim as possibly the Kidron of Ezekiel, but certainly as some dry, thirsty valley where the acacia which flourished where other plants perished from lack of water was known to grow, another reason for thinking that the original acacia which Freemasons revere was the smaller shrub rather than the large tree. Inasmuch as acacia in Greek signifies innocence, it was only natural for Hutcheson, who wrote The Spirit of Masonry in 1795, to connect the Masonic plant with the Greek definition. He said, quote, "We Masons, describing the deplorable state of religion under the Jewish law, speak in figures. Quote, her tomb was in the rubbish and the filth cast forth of the temple, and the acacia wove its branches over her monument." End quote. Acacia, being the Greek word for innocence or being free from sin, implying that the sins and the corruptions of the old law and devotees of the Jewish altar had hid religion from those who sought her, and she was only to be found where innocence survived, under the banner of the Divine Lamb, and, as to ourselves, professing that we were to be distinguished by our acacy, or as true Acacians, in our religious faiths and tenets. It is now well understood that Hutcheson, great as is the debate, was too anxious to read a Christian interpretation into everything Masonic to be considered as infallible. While the coincidence of the Greek word, our name for Shatta tree, is suggestive, it hardly seems sufficient to read innocence into the symbol when it already has so sublime a significance. Mackey considers the acacia also as a symbol of initiation because sacred plants were symbolical of initiation in many of the ancient mysteries from which Freemasonry derived so much. The modern Masonic scholar is rather apt to pass over this meaning. He is also thinking that a symbol already so rich needs no further meaning to make it important and beautiful. Apparently, the beginning of the association of the acacia with immortality is in the legend of Isis and Osiris, one of the oldest myths of mankind traced back to Egypt many thousands of years before the Christian era. Its beginnings, like those of all legends which have endured, are shrouded in the mist which draws a veil between us and the days before history. According to the legend, Osiris, who was at once both king and god of the Egyptians, and was tricked by his brother Typhon, who was very jealous of Osiris, during the king's absence on a beneficent mission to his people. Later, at a feast provided for the king god's pleasure, Typhon brought a large chest, beautiful in workmanship, valuable in the extreme, and offered it as a gift to whoever possessed a body which best fitted the chest. When Osiris entered the box, Typhon caused the lid to be shut and fastened it, after which the whole was thrown into the Nile. Currents carried it to Byblos, Phoenicia, and cast it ashore at the foot of an acacia tree. The tree grew rapidly and soon encased the chest, holding the body of Osiris. When Isis' faithful queen learned of the fate of her husband, she set out in search of the body. Meanwhile, the king of the land, where the acacia concealed the body, admiring the tree's beauty, cut it down and made of its trunk a column. Learning this, Isis became nurse to the king's children and received the column as her pay. In the tree trunk preserved was the body of Osiris. During their long captivity at the hands of the Egyptians, what more natural than that the Israelites should take for their own a symbol already old, and makes of the Shatta tree a symbol of immortality, just as had been done in Egypt. It is perhaps too much to say that Israelites were the first to plant a sprig of acacia if they had had a grave as a symbol of immortality, but that they did so in ancient times is stated by many historians. Dalcho assigns a novel reason for this practice, that the Codens or priests were forbidden to step upon or over a grave. It was necessary that spots of interment be marked, and the acacia being common, it was elected for the purpose. Mackey disagrees with Dalcho as to these reasons for making a grave with a living plant. Perhaps the origin of the custom is not important. Certain it is that all peoples in almost all ages have planted or laid flowers on the graves of those they love, as the symbol of resurrection and a future life. The lily of the modern church, the rosemary, which is for remembrance, the sprig of acacia of the ancient Israelites, and the modern mason have all the same meaning upon the grave, the visual expression of the dearest hope of all mankind. It is both curious and interesting to learn that many trees in many times have been the symbols of immortality. India gave to Egypt the lotus, long a sacred plant. The Greeks thought the myrtle the tree of immortal life, and the mistletoe, which survives in our lives merely as a pleasant diversion at Christmas, was held by the Scandinavians and the Druids as sacred as we consider the acacia. Association of plant and immortality is emphasized in the New Testament. See John 12:24, quote, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone, but if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. Also, familiar passages from St. Paul, 1 Corinthians 15, 36-37, used so much in funeral services. Quote, "Thou fool, that which thou sowest is not quickened, except it die. And that which thou sowest not that body that shall be, but bare grain. It may chance of wheat, or of some other grain." End quote. Finally, we read in our own stately prayer in the Master's degree such a coupling of the tree and life immortal. Quote, "For there is hope of a tree, if it be cut down, that it will sprout again, and that the tender branches thereof will not cease." End quote. Which, of course, is taken from Job 14:7. Thus, there is ample historical recognition of the connection between that which grows and dies and grows again and the idea of immortality. We do not have to consider the undoubted fact that shiitake trees cut to form beams of a house often sprouted branches even when they had no roots, nor our own thought of almost any variety of pine as, quote-unquote, the evergreen or ever-living tree. To see that there is much background behind the symbol. It is one of the glories of Freemasonry that so much has been made of the symbol, so dear and deep a meaning vested in it, that it has almost equaled the square as Freemasonry's nearest and dearest. All that was mortal on Tyrion lay murdered in a grave dug 6 feet due east and west. The genius of the temple was no more. No more designs upon the trestle board, no more glorious architecture to come from that mighty brain, no more holding of meetings with Solomon and Hiram in the Sanctum Sanctorum. The widow's son had passed. Of those who search, one finds a sprig of acacia. O immortal story, thrice immortal ritual makers who couple together a resurrection and sprig of green. True he whose mother was of the tribe of Naphtali was destroyed. But his genius lived, his spirit marched on, his virtues were recorded in stone and in the hearts of those who built on the Mount Moriah's heights. For at least 200 years, and probably much longer, the sprig of acacia has held Freemasonry's premier teaching. The grave is not the end. Bodies die and decay, but something, which bears the nearest affinity to that which pervades all nature and which never dies, rises from the grave to become one, that vast throng which has preceded us. Error can slay, as can evil and selfish greed, but not permanently. That which is true and fair and fine cannot be destroyed. Its body may be murdered, its disappearance may be effected. The rubbish of the temple and temporary grave may conceal it for a time, but where is interred that which is mortal, there grows an evergreen or ever-living sprig of acacia. Acacia nonetheless, that it may be a spiritual sprig, a plant, not of the earth or earthly. When he who was weary plucked at the sprig of acacia, he had, quote-unquote, evidence of things not seen. When we toss the little sprig of acacia into the open grave of our brethren who has stepped ahead upon the path we must all tread, we give evidence of belief in a, quote-unquote, thing not seen. For never a man has seen the spirit of one who has gone, or visioned the land where no shadows are. If we see it in our dreams, we see by faith, not eyes. But we can see the acacia. We can look back through the dragging years to the legend of Osiris, and think that even as the acacia grew about his body to protect it until Isis might find it, so does the acacia of Freemasonry bloom above the casket from which, in the solemn words of Ecclesiastes, the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. Alright, I hope you guys enjoyed that. There were quite a few typos in the original, and I had to fix them slightly as I read it. Of course, both of those papers will be in the bonus features of the apps, which brings us to our next part of the podcast. Of course, this is the Support the Show. So if you go to wcypodcast.com and click on Support the Show, you're going to see a few ways to help us out. One is by shopping. So you can go to freemasonryart.com or onnit.com and check out their product. If you use the coupon code WCY at checkout, you'll get 10% off, and they send a little bit back to the show. If you go to PayPal, you choose the amount to donate to the show, whether you donate $1 or $2, whatever you like. You pick the amount, and it goes right back into the show, hosting costs and equipment. And the third way is, of course, our apps, which are available on Android, Apple, and Windows phones. What they allow you to do is stream the show, whether you're streaming it right from the internet, or you can even download it, save it for later, listen while in airplane mode. But most importantly, it gives you access to the papers we read on the show, and Masonic wallpapers, which are themed for your mobile device. So check those out. This week, you're going to get the new video that I just finished up. Feel free to share that anywhere you'd like. In addition to that, the papers that we just read. That's it for this week. Please find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can check us out on Google Plus at the email address wcypodcast@gmail.com, or you can email me anytime at admin@wcypodcast.com as well. Please check out the Masonic Roundtable, which is live on Tuesday nights at 10, 9 Central, which is also syndicated forever on YouTube, and we do the show through Google Hangouts, so you'll want to follow Masonic Roundtable on Google Plus. Check out the Midnight Freemasons 3 times a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, for new articles. And of course, many thanks to everybody who is enjoying the Masonic Radio Theater. We're well underway getting our 3rd episode up and going, so check that out when you get a shot. www.masonicradiotheater.com. That's it, guys. We'll talk to you all next week. Stay in the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.